fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
I went to go see Spider-Man after all of that.
All right, well, let's talk Spider-Man. How was it? What'd you think?
I really liked most of it.
That seems to be the consensus. It seems to be like people are saying that it's good, but why did we need to rehash like all the origin stuff and stuff like that? I don't know.
Well, I think because, you know, it was... You know, people do it in comics all the time, and I think what is happening now is that movies are sort of reaching the level of comics, you know, where, you know, they'll do a reboot on occasion. And I really think it did work doing the reboot, because honestly, a lot of the Ant-Man Uncle Ben stuff was some of my favorite stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the casting first of all, the casting was just phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. So, Martin Sheen greater than Cliff Robertson, in your opinion?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I like Cliff Robertson.
I did too. I mean, it doesn't, that's the nice thing about this one, is it doesn't really take anything away from the first movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if anything, it just sort of like, if it fills it, like one of the nice, one of the things, like just, it's a random, just a little thing, but where when Uncle Ben's shot, he's the first one there on the scene to, you know, to be there. And that makes a bigger emotional impact than, you know, than the way it happened in the first movie, you know?
Yeah.
It's really the interesting thing is so much of it is structured to be, you know, around the emotions, you know, like it's a very emotional movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, I got Ian. Ian's coming on.
Oh, awesome.
I think. Is that you, Ian?
USA. USA.
Yes. We're recording this on 4th of July. Paul has seen Spider-Man, so he was kind of talking about it.
It opened?
Yeah, what are you talking about? It opened yesterday.
Oh, wow. Well, thumbs up or thumbs down? Did you get that far into it?
Well, he liked it, yeah. Wait, hold on a second.
I liked a lot of it, yeah.
He liked a lot of it.
Why don't we get our little intro going on here, and then we can dive into this patriotic Spider-Man extravaganza.
Well, this is Part-Time Fanboy, and I'm here with Paul and Ian. And, I mean, I'm going to keep that beginning part in, because you were talking about Spider-Man, the movie.
Awesome.
But you liked it, right?
I did. I liked it quite a bit. The performances were great. The casting was like sort of dead on. And what I was telling Christian is that this movie is a really good movie. And even though it does go over the origin again, it doesn't in any way take away from, you know, the first Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
I think if anything, it sort of adds in some things that were kind of missing, you know?
Huh. And Ian, are you still there?
I am.
Oh, okay, great. So, well, because I was very much like not wanting to see it when I saw the original trailer. I was just, I loved What's-Her-Face as Gwen Stacy. I was like, wow, they nailed it. I mean, they nailed that big time. But it just seemed like, why are we doing this? And I did really like the first two. I mean, I think the Sam Raimi ones, the third one is garbage as far as I'm concerned, but... The first one has its flaws, in my mind, being the Green Goblin armor. You know, mm-hmm. I just thought they just fucked that up so bad.
Like, yeah, that was bad.
I couldn't
that
believe
like
how bad
that looked. Garbage can with some mesh.
You look like a face. Power Ranger. Yeah, something out of the Power Rangers. But for the most part, I liked it. I mean, they got the pathos and all that. And
you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting about this movie is that it takes a super realistic view of New York and the characters and the environment. I mean, one of the things I noticed was that everything looks very real, even though a lot of it's, you know, obviously shot on a soundstage. Raimi, with his style, tends to make things look like they were shot on a soundstage. And that's intentional. You know, he has sort of a theatricality and a cartooniness about his style, you know? And that's not here. I mean, this looks very, very real. And the other thing that just blows me away is, you know what? The first Spider-Man was 10 years ago?
Yeah, more than that, I think.
The advance in special effects since then is amazing. I mean, it is so realistic looking.
Really? So did you see it in 3D or 2D?
Oh, I saw it in 2D. I try to avoid 3D whenever possible, except for Prometheus. Go see Prometheus in 3D.
But, really?
Yeah. But this one, I saw it in 2D, and I don't think that I missed, you know, anything big by not seeing it in 3D. It's a really well-made movie. The corporate, there's a little sort of corporate espionage subplot going on.
Of course there is.
Since it's Oscorp, which honestly it's sort of the weakest bit of the movie, but it's the thing that sets it up for the sequel, so you know I understand why it's there.
Yeah.
But you know the cast is great. The writing's really good, and to me a lot of it captures some of the best stuff about the second Spider-Man, which is my favorite.
Yeah.
And, you know, it definitely captures a lot of that sort of, you know, people sticking together and coming together around, you know, their hero and around their city.
Yeah.
There's a couple of little subplots that, you know, leads into people sort of rallying around him in a way, you know. And, you know, I think that it's really cool that, you know, New York's got their own superhero. You know, Spider-Man is like, and in this movie, he really comes across as a product of New York, you know. Like,
that's great.
And so I really dig that. You know, we've got our own, you know, we've got Iron Man here. Even though he moved to New York in the, you know, in the Avengers, you know. But let's face it, he is a total West Coast superhero.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's interesting that you mentioned New York, because, I mean, you know, it's just, growing up in and around that area, you know, it was just, you know, and being dragged into the city all the time, you know, most of my childhood, a big chunk of my childhood was spent in New Jersey, but I have family that lived in Queens and stuff. Mm-hmm. So being like in Queens and having grown up part of my life in Queens too, Flushing, I just, New York, it was just so great in the Marvel comics, where it was like, this was New York City, and you would see Peter Parker in New York City, and, you know, they wouldn't necessarily use, like, reference or anything all that much, but you got that it was New York City, you know, I mean, it was just great. It was, and
even though this is mostly filmed in Culver City, I mean, it really feels like New York.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Like, I just, because that's the one thing about Marvel that, and I mean, I know that DC and Marvel, they're kind of trying to change their sort of American image and make it more, a bit more international. And they're kind of making Spider-Man a bit more of a, like, he's joined the Avengers and he's a bit more of a sort of on a bigger scale superhero at this point, instead of like the street fighter that he was when we were growing up. But that's what I used to love about Spider-Man, that he was just by himself. He didn't really have a lot of help, you know, and he was a New Yorker.
I think you'll really like this movie, too, because they do a great job of really keeping him behind the eight ball, like, through a lot of the movie. They just pile on him, you know, emotionally, physically. I mean, he just gets a lot piled on. And to me, that's like when Spider-Man is his best, you know. He's in this movie, he's definitely a kid who's learning what it takes to be a man, and you know, I think they really excelled in that.
Is it dark perfect? As Avengers?
No, it's not quite lighter. As dark, although it does have, you know, some darkness. And one of the things I thought is interesting is visually, I think Spider-Man could fit in with the Avengers based on, you know, looking at the movie overall.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool, because, I mean, there are these rumors going around the internet that they're thinking, like, maybe Sony and Disney will maybe come to some sort of deal, and, you know, to let, like, Spider-Man make a cameo in the Avengers or something like that. And if that were to happen, that would just be insane. That would just be awesome. I mean, can you imagine that sort of thing where, you know, they make some sort of deal where superheroes are guest starring in each other's movies for like a fraction of a second?
That'd be great.
That would be nice.
Well, that's great. So, okay, so Amy and I may have an opportunity to see a movie this weekend, a grown-up movie. And I know, it's pretty crazy. So would you recommend this or Prometheus? Because I'm leaning towards this, Spider-Man.
Go see Spider-Man. Prometheus is a very cool looking problematic movie. I went to see it. Actually, went to see it again with Scott last week.
Oh yeah.
Seeing it a second time really highlighted a lot of the story and character problems for me, Prometheus. But that 3D again is just gorgeous. I haven't seen. It's the only movie that I wanted to see again in 3D.
Oh, really? Wow. Really?
Yeah.
It is beautiful. It's beautiful.
The 3D is just gorgeous. It's Ridley Scott. You know, I mean, this guy has, you know, forgotten more about movie composition than most of us will ever learn. You know.
Yeah.
And to see a real master composing in 3D is just pretty amazing.
Wow. Oh, that's cool. But at some point, if we don't see it in the theater, we're not going to see it in 3D. I mean, I don't have a 3D TV. I have no desire to purchase one, you know,
right.
So we probably won't. But I don't know. I keep hearing really good things about The Amazing Spider-Man, which I'm very surprised about, because it kind of looked like a turd to me. And I'm very happy that it turned out well. So, I mean, that's great.
It was so much better than I expected going in.
Yeah.
And you know, and a lot of that's Andrew Garfield too, you know. Like, he really, even though he's not, you know, sort of the traditional geeky Peter Parker.
Yeah.
You know, it's more of he's shy, you know, and not confident.
Gotcha.
You know, he's got a lot going on, but he's just not very confident. And, you know, and one of the things that I think this movie does super well is it builds the whole Peter and Flash Thompson dynamic really well.
Oh, really?
It's one of the most realistic, you know, like, yeah, I mean, and they're antagonizing each other, but it's that high school, like, you know, Flash is antagonizing people, and he doesn't even know why he's doing it, you know? Like, he's just doing it because, you know, it's what's expected of him.
Yeah.
And then there's a really cool, there's some cool developments there. Like, it's played out surprisingly well. Uh-huh. And it's the character work that really, really sells the movie. And the action's not bad either. The Lizard, I was a little hesitant about as a villain, but they pulled it off really well. He fights like the Lizard, you know? He uses that tail to sweep around and,
that's cool.
Come over, things like that.
That's cool. Well, I mean,
hey, Paul.
Yeah.
Even with all the trailers that were out, it didn't ruin the movie? Because I thought they went, like, trailer happy online. Like, it was like, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, there were just tons and tons of clips. And I didn't watch them, but did you watch those and then see the movie?
I did not watch them because I've just gotten to the point now where I will watch, you know, one trailer, maybe two, of a movie, and then I just try to avoid stuff because I don't necessarily want to know too much going in. But to me, a lot of the best stuff that was in here was stuff that was not in the trailer.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
Oh, that's great. Good. That's fantastic. Great. So I'll check out The Amazing Spider-Man. I know Amy's interested to see it too, so that's great. So I guess we should talk, since we started off with Spider-Man, I mean, I guess we should talk a little bit about the history of Spider-Man, you know, go a little bit into that if we want. I mean, how big of a Spider-Man fans were you guys growing up? I mean, are you still Spider-Man fans at all, like as far as comics and stuff go? Or
I know that I actually, you know, when I started collecting, soon after is when the McFarlane Spider-Man hit. So uh-huh. I was still, you know, young enough to be completely in awe of the whole buzz around it. And yeah. I started collecting that from one, because I would always pick up random issues of, that was the only comic or character, I think, Spider-Man, that I would randomly pick up books about. So if I saw a web of Spider-Man cover I liked, I would just pick it up. If I saw an Amazing Spider-Man cover I liked, I would just pick it up.
That's interesting.
You know, it never disappointed. And then I got really into the whole Carnage thing and the Venom thing, and then of course picked up the trade paperback of there was like a McFarlane, I think, collection, or was the Spider-Man versus Venom trade paperback, actually. I got into that. So definitely had a nice little section for Spider-Man, but he was never my favorite. I Batman and Hulk always edged him out, but he never disappointed. I think you always picked that up. You always had a good time with the Spidey comic, you know? You couldn't go wrong.
So, Ian, you were like, you got into Spider-Man. Well, first, I do agree with you that Spider-Man was kind of like the solid pickup. Like, if you were just picking up a blind comic, and it didn't really matter which one, whether it was Amazing or Spectacular, maybe more so Amazing than Spectacular, because that was always the book that I loved. But you were pretty much guaranteed a good time, right? I mean, Spider-Man kind of, for some reason, it was just always a good read. It wasn't like maybe Superman, where you would pick up an issue of Superman and you'd be like, oh, that wasn't so great. Like, for some reason, Spider-Man was just always like a great read. I mean, you were almost guaranteed like good quality. But what's interesting to me is how, Ian, when you got into it, that's when I started dropping out of it.
That's like, exactly the same with me.
Yeah, McFarlane kind of ruined Spider-Man for me. As much as I love the artwork, there's a specific moment, and I don't know if it was his Spider-Man number one. Like, I loved his artwork, but when McFarlane started writing Spider-Man, like, she became like, Mary Jane became like a supermodel, and then Peter Parker like published a book of all his Spider-Man photographs called Webs, and he was like on evening talk shows and stuff. Like, he was kind of becoming semi famous. But there's one specific panel that I'll never forget, and this is so geek nerd that made me drop McFarlane Spider-Man, or made me kind of move away from Spider-Man. And it was, there's a panel where Spider-Man, there's a something going on with a tank, and Spider-Man picks up the tank over his head and like throws the tank. And I was like, wait a minute. The handbook to the Marvel Universe says that Spider-Man can only lift 10 tons. A tank weighs more than, what the fuck is going on here? And that was like the geek moment that I had with McFarlane Spider-Man, where I was like, no, I'm done. They're not. They don't even care anymore. And that's kind of when I started dropping out. And it's interesting. I started getting into like heavy duty into Spider-Man when they introduced the alien costume the first time. You guys remember that?
That stuff was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Like, I think it was Ron Frenz was doing the art, and I can't remember who wrote those issues, but that was some great Spider-Man stuff. And the Hobgoblin kind of being introduced.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I was really hardcore into Spider-Man.
Yeah, my hardcore Spider-Man stuff always is all the 1970s stuff, because I happened to hit a garage sale where somebody was just getting rid of like all these Spider-Man comics. And so like all the stuff that I read were like the, you know, pretty much the Gwen Stacy stuff.
Through
the Green Goblin, and then, you know, right up after that, you know, I mean, so pretty much I think, like, I don't know, like 72 to 76 or something like that is sort of my, that's like sort of my ideal Spider-Man stuff.
Wow. So wait, how old were you? Because 72, I mean, that's kind of when I was born. I mean, that's older.
I think I probably hit this garage sale when I was like 9 or 10. So this would have been like the 1979 or something like that. So somebody, you know, like this was just before the speculative market hit. And, you know, none of them were in great shape or anything like that. So literally I just bought a box of this guy's comics, a large box of his comics for, I think, $5. It was full of like fantastic. It was pretty much all the Marvel titles through that time period. It was like Fantastic Four, Captain America, Spider-Man. The guy just was like a real Marvel fan, and you know, and then at this garage sale, he was just kind of you know, it was a guy who was like, you know, sort of cleaning out his closet and saying goodbye to his geekdom and I guess starting mine, you know.
I mean, he must totally regret that to this day, because those are some hardcore issues to find. I mean, the Gwen Stacy stuff and the Green Goblin stuff, I mean, that's classic. But I mean, yeah, I mean, so I mean, what but then were you like hooked on from there on in, or did you start picking up the modern day stuff once you started reading those?
You know, I just really liked rereading all the old stuff because I did pick up a few of the more modern ones, but they just didn't have the same appeal to me. You know, I don't know. I probably couldn't have put it into words at the time why I didn't like it, but I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that it was like sort of more soap opera-ish, and it was more centered on Peter, you know, sort of growing up and making his way in the world. But, you know, again, by the time the 80s rolls around, you've got, you know, he is a larger character in the Marvel universe now, and you know, he's sort of, and certainly by the time he's, you know, settled down with Mary Jane, you know, he's living like the sort of the dream life in a way, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, like I related to him when he was getting, you know, the crap kicked out of him, and you know, trying to balance his homework life with his social life with his, you know, so I don't know, I guess like those early things just sort of spoke to me more than the more modern stuff did.
Yeah, well, I mean, during the 80s there was still a lot of that stuff, and that's the stuff I identified with the most, which was basically, you know, paying the rent. And I mean, I wasn't paying rent at that point, but
I understood
like what was going on, and having girl troubles and all that stuff. And I think the real, I mean, just to talk about specific storylines, I mean, there was the alien costume, because there was a lot of stuff going on where it was Secret Wars, and it honestly I think kind of the alien costume to this day is one of the most kind of asinine things that they ever did with him, because I remember that was a big deal when he switched to the black costume, and you know, it was all over. That was like one of the big, I think maybe after the Dark Knight Returns, like big comic book stories that was in the news, where it was like, oh, they totally switched and now it's black. And there were a lot of people that were like, that hated the new costume, and there were a lot of people that loved the new costume. And you know, but I guess the big thing was that the costume could like change shape. You know what I mean? And it could do like all these funky things. And, you know, the bomb that was dropped was that it was like a living thing, and it was taking control of him at night. And he was like always tired, and, you know, and he didn't know why he was always so exhausted. And then you found out that it was a parasite, right? Which eventually leads to
the Venom thing. Yeah.
Yeah, which is what Ian liked, right? Venom. And stuff like that.
I don't know if I liked it, but it was definitely interesting. I guess because I read the trade paperback first, so I saw the whole entire origin in one sitting without collecting individually.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, this is really cool. So I got the whole story arc right there, and then as the Carnage stuff came out, that was even cooler because they really went crazy with that.
But
with the black costume, I know specifically because I was such a huge Hulk fan, I would go to conventions around, you know, Jersey and specifically look for, and I finally got it, that one where it's Spider-Man versus Hulk, but Spider-Man's wearing the black costume, or he had gained cosmic powers.
Is this like the Captain Cosmic or the
He put him in
Captain
the orbit.
Universe.
He put the Hulk in the orbit, and for some reason I just got it confused with the black costume. But
yeah,
that was when I went back, and that was a McFarlane pencil too.
Oh really?
They've done so much with the character, and it's pretty amazing. Like culturally, it's pretty amazing, I think, too. In Japan, I remember I was in Japan when Spider-Man had come out, because I was living there, and a lot of the people were kind of freaked out by it, because a lot of the Japanese heroes don't wear any masks. Like, you only wear a mask if you're, like, in a kabuki. So the closest thing they related Spider-Man to over there was, like, kabuki actors.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because if you think about all the samurai and they're all have, you know, you always see their faces. So they were kind of like us. You know, the little kids were really starting to get into it, but but kids that kind of knew about Spider-Man already, they weren't so gung-ho about him over there. But I think he's so worldwide at this point.
I've got to say, though, have you ever seen the Spider-Man
manga?
Well, not the manga, the Spider-Man TV series that they did in Japan.
I don't think I've seen
that.
No,
when did that come
out? There's a This is a 1970s television series, and it's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And he's got a giant robot.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Yeah, well, that's probably the days where Marvel was just licensing everything to whoever was interested in it, right? You know, everyone from, like, Roger Corman to... They were just like, just get it out there. Just, it doesn't matter what it is. Just get it out there. But, oh, that's really interesting. Because, yeah, I know they did a Spider-Man manga, which I think you can find translated into English, like, legally.
Yes.
You don't have to find it online. I think they reprinted some of it into a book, and then I know that, like you said, yeah, that Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, or whatever they called it, with the giant robot, the TV show. So I thought he had a pretty big following out there with the mask, in Japan.
People still definitely watch it and everything, but it's just interesting how he's been through so many incarnations, but it's really still a dude in a suit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very cool. I don't know. I'm excited.
And of course,
in general,
you have other Spider-Men now too. You've got the I guess in Ultimate Spider-Man, you've got Hispanic Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Is that right now? And there was an Indian Spider-Man also.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And Marvel did a special line. This was about 5 years ago, I want to say. They did a special line of comics in India that was sort of geared toward a Indian audience, and so Spider-Man, one of the things they did was a Spider-Man Indian version. As a sort of a side note, one of the actors in Amazing Spider-Man is apparently one of India's biggest actors, one of the big Bollywood
Oh,
actors.
Really? Oh, that's
and,
cool.
And it's a pretty minor role, but, you know, he's got some lines and stuff like that, and he'll probably be around for the sequel. And so I guess as a result, the movie's doing really well in India right now.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. Well, that's the thing is that, I mean, he's been around for so long, and there have been so many, Spider-Man 2099. Did you guys ever pick that up? I mean, that was some interesting stuff where there was a line of Marvel Comics where they put them like 100 years into the future or something like that. And he wasn't a descendant of Spider-Man. It was just, I can't remember the exact story. The big thing that I remember was the Rick Leonardi artwork. I used to love Rick Leonardi. His artwork was so dynamic and just perfect for Spider-Man. And I remember he was on Cloak and Dagger for a while, and he did some Spider-Man issues that I just loved. I remember just loving them as a kid. So, Spider-Man 2099, and of course you've got Ultimate Spider-Man, the Bendis, which was really, really a good take, a good sort of like reinvigoration of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
For all the crap that Bendis gets, and I haven't read Ultimate Spider-Man in a long time. I kind of dropped out when Bagley kind of first dropped out of the artwork, but he was that was a really good run of issues. The
Yeah, the new movie owes a lot to the Ultimate Spider-Man storyline.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Like, is it very much like the Ultimate Spider-Man? But they kept the web shooters, because yes, Ultimate Spider-Man was what kind of did the organic web shooters, right? That was
It's kind of funny. It turns into this like sort of weird Mobius strip of stuff. Is that they made Ultimate Spider-Man as a result of the movie to sort of, reintroduce comic audiences to the character, and so they had given the organic web shooters. And then when the time turns around and they're making a movie that's more like the Ultimate Spider-Man storyline, they end up going back to the mechanical web shooters, which were discarded by the movies in the first place. So.
Yeah. Well, I love the mechanical web shooters. I never knew why they got rid of them. That was one of the things that kind of always ticked me off as far as the movie was concerned. I was just like, because I always thought it said a lot about Peter Parker's character. Like, I love the web, and there's all these people who are like, well, how can I believe that a little kid would come up with web shooter? I mean, come on, he would be like a million. And I'm like, what, really? The dude has spider powers. He has fucking spider powers, okay? Like, you can't believe that he could build web shooter, that he would be smart enough. And then, it's like, well, then he would be a millionaire. He would have $1 million. And I'm like, no, there's this thing called, like, low self-esteem. Like, you create something in your garage and you don't think that anybody's going to give a shit. And they actually...
I think the movie comes up with an explanation that will satisfy all camps.
Well, that's great, and I appreciate that. But that was just, like, one of the things that used to just infuriate me, which I was just... I was just like, what are you talking about? I mean, it's part of the whole thing. It's like he's smart. He creates the web. Ah, whatever. Just jackasses. That used to just get me so angry that people would just be like, And I was fine with it in Ultimate Spider-Man. In Ultimate Spider-Man, I was like, okay, this is like an alternative take. They do whatever they want. That's fine. But don't. And they actually did it in the mainstream comics, I think. I remember they were kind of trying to give him the organic web shooters, and I think the fans flipped out so much that they were just like, okay, let's just go back to having him with the mechanical web shooters.
It was Raimi, right, that originally changed it?
Yeah, I think it was Raimi, and I think Paul is right when he says that Ultimate Spider-Man came out. Did Ultimate Spider-Man come out after the Raimi movie? Or,
yeah, I'm pretty sure it did.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah.
But that's me typing. That's enthralling podcasting right there, me typing.
when you hear the sound of typing, you know someone means business.
Yeah.
As soon as Christian was like, I'm going to type, a firework went off in my neighborhood.
Are you serious? Happy 4th of July. But so what are some of your favorite, like, specific... I mean, because I know that the big moment for me was when they revealed that MJ, Mary Jane, kind of, like, knew his identity all along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, look, Spider-Man is 2002, and Ultimate Spider-Man is 2000.
Oh, okay. My mistake.
Yeah, I think, and I remember Bill Hemas being kind of, like, very much involved in that whole relaunch, and that was sort of the era where... Joe Quesada and Bill Hemas kind of like got back in charge, became in charge of Marvel, like the whole Marvel universe, and they kind of they launched the Ultimate Universe. A lot of fans got pissed and freaked out, but I remember actually liking Ultimate Spider-Man and thinking like, oh, this is okay, like this is decent, okay.
I can tell you exactly my favorite Spider-Man issue of all times.
Which one is that?
Amazing Spider-Man number 153.
Uh-huh.
On February 1976, Len Wein was the writer.
Uh-huh.
I think Ross Andrew was the artist. It's all set on pretty much Empire State University's campus.
Uh-huh.
And it's the story of basically Peter Parker getting involved in a cab robbery.
Uh-huh.
And as the plot plays out, he finds out that it's involved with this sort of corporate espionage thing that's going on. It doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense, but there's this character there's a great character who was like the star football player. He used to be the star football player for Empire State University.
Yeah.
And he's being blackmailed. His family's been kidnapped by this, you know, sort of mysterious, shadowy consortium. And at the, you know, the, at the showdown, the big showdown at the end happens on the football field. And this guy just tries to, he takes off after the bad guy, and you know, he's like running all the way to the end, and he ends up, you know, he ends up saving his little daughter, and Spider-Man, you know, gets there in time to, you know, sort of save the day, but it's too late to save him. You know, he's been shot.
This is issue 156 that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
Because the cover that I found online is the wedding of Betty Brant and Ned Leeds.
I'm sorry, that's 153.
153. All right, hold on. I'm looking it up. So, okay, you were saying, go back, you were saying that it happens on a football field, the finale?
Yes.
Yeah. And what happened? And what happens on the football field?
So, on the football field, you know, you've got your bad guy, villain. There's a big showdown. The football player, the former football player, ends up like running the entire field to try to take down the bad guy by himself, which he succeeds in doing. But and Spider-Man gets there sort of too late to save him. You know, he ends up saving the little girl.
Yeah.
But the football player dies.
Yeah.
And wow. So Spider-Man wins, kind of, but. You know, he also didn't get there in time to save the guy who he was going to. And so it was one of the, it's a real mixed victory kind of thing. And I've never seen that done in a comic book before.
Uh-huh.
You know, where, you know, he wins, the bad guy gets justice, but, you know, the good guys take a big heap, you know, heaping beating too. And it's really well done. Lynn Wine was just one of my favorite writers all through that time.
Uh-huh.
And
I love the cover. I'm looking at it right now. It says the deadliest 100 yards.
Yes,
and it's
got
Spider-Man leaping through the goalposts, and he's got the little girl, and there's all these dudes. Yeah, that is an awesome Marvel cover right there. That looks like Gil Kane artwork too, maybe inked by somebody else. That's cool. Anyway, you were saying, I'm sorry.
But no. It's a fantastic, just fantastic little. I just loved the ending, you know, because like everyone's dead, you know. Spider-Man, you know, like I said, he got there in time to save the little girl, but everyone else has just like, you know, has died. So it's like he's again stuck with this huge mess around him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's typically what, you know, what the deal is with Spider-Man, right? It's like no matter how hard he tries, he's never really able to get complete victory. I mean, he'll win a part of the fight, but maybe he won't win the battle. You know what I mean? There's always some sort of residual crap that's left over. That he's left with, you know what I mean? And that's really great. I mean, my biggest Spider-Man moment is, again, like I said, when Mary Jane reveals that she's known all along that Peter Parker was Spider-Man, you know, and that, and I think that was a Ron Frenz drawn issue, and I can't remember the exact number, but I just remember just practically just dropping the book out of my hands, like literally just being like, ah, what? Like just like she knew the whole time. Like it wouldn't calculate. Like it just wouldn't. It wouldn't. I my brain could not process it. And just also that they had set Mary Jane up as sort of like a flake and not being very smart. And Amazing Spider-Man 257, that's the one. And
cool.
That to me is literally the moment where I was like, damn, it's on. Like Spider-Man is just, you know, it changed forever, you know. And I didn't know that comics could do that. You know, I didn't know that you know, the status quo could change like that. I thought that you had to have things in place and this is the way they were going to go. I mean, and, you know, once you establish the cast, like Lois Lane, Clark Kent, Batman, Bruce, you know what I mean? Like that things could not change. And here I found the dialogue. She's like, "I've known your secret for years. Up until today, I always thought I could cope with it if I ever had to experience it firsthand. But I can't. I can't. I just can't cope with the fact that Peter Parker is secretly Spider-Man." And then you've got him like in his face, and half his face is Spider-Man mask, and half his face is Peter Parker. And oh, it's just great. I'll never forget that as long as I live. I just, that just wiped me out. And you know, that's just, that is my big Spider-Man moment. How about you, Ian?
I actually think my favorite stuff, just because I was sporadically collecting, I love the crossover stuff. So, like, I got really into the Tex, Ghost Rider, and Spider-Man. Spider-Man jumped in there for a couple of issues early on, and I'd never seen Spider-Man drawn so heavy. Like, it really, it looked like Spider-Man was so heavy that he couldn't do all the Spider-Man things that he normally does when like Bagley was drawing him, or even Eric Larson, right, was drawing Spider-Man for a while. So, but I really love that. And then I loved when they did the Fantastic Four switch over, where Hulk, Wolverine, Ghost Rider, and Spider-Man became awesome. The Fantastic Four. And again, I think that was that Hughes that did that?
It might have been Adam. Yeah, no, not Hughes. It might have been how can I blank out on his name? Art Adams.
Art Adams, thank you. I always get them confused. It was Art Adams, and that was like the way he drew Spider-Man, I thought was perfect. Like, really awesome stuff. So those two crossovers really stick out in my mind for sure. And then, you know, if of course the Hulk with the cosmic powers, I just, you couldn't go wrong. You know what I mean? You really couldn't go wrong.
Yeah,
and
that's cool.
That's the best thing about the character, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really great stuff, and I want to run down the line, like, and just recommend some stuff to people out there who maybe have seen the movie and, you know, maybe aren't so crazy into Spider-Man, but, you know, I just, obviously you want to find like a reprint of Amazing Fantasy number 15, which is quite literally Spider-Man's very first appearance anywhere. And the reason that I remember it's Amazing Fantasy number 15 is because it's 15 on the cover, and the cover date is August, and August 15th, well, happens to be both Paul and mine's birthday. So
that's right.
Yeah, and that's how come I can always remember the very first appearance of Spider-Man. I'm sure that it's reprinted, you know, in many places, in many trades, but that's the first, and that's by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. And you cannot find a better, perfect representation of Spider-Man. You know, that's the origin story, and they did it in one issue, and they set everything up, and it's fantastic. And I'm looking on Amazon, and there look to be a lot of posters and stuff for sale. You know, but I'm sure you can find it in a Marvel Masterworks, like Spider-Man Marvel Masterworks, or what are those collections? The Ultimate the black and white ones, Paul. What are those called?
Yeah. I'm blanking on the name of those too. But
I want to say
they're not
Ultimate.
The Marvel Masterworks, but they're the I don't know.
Yeah, here we go. Spider-Man Marvel Masterworks. Yeah, The Amazing Spider-Man. They've got tons of them, and I've heard that they've started reprinting those in soft cover, so people can find them. And I think Comixology probably has a sale going on for the next couple of days as far as like Spider-Man is concerned. But that would be my biggest recommendation, people to find those. Essentials, The Essentials. That's what they're called. The Marvel Essentials Collection. And those are in black and white, and they're really cheap. And if people want to find them, you know, find Spider-Man stories, especially the classic ones, you can get them through those collections. But and then the other thing that I think really stands out might be Kraven's Last Hunt. Did you guys ever read that?
Oh, those are great.
Yeah.
Paul, he guest stars with Wendigo doesn't he? Oh, that was what McFarlane did. A Wendigo and Kraven, I think, showed up in there.
Yeah, no, but I'm talking about, this is something else. This is Kraven's Last Hunt, and it's Mike Zeck, and I can't remember who wrote it, but it's supposed, it was supposed to be like the final like nail in the coffin on the character of Kraven, and they really make it, it's really dark, and it's like where he, you think he kills Spider-Man and takes over his identity, and I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but that is some really intense classic Spider-Man reading right there, you know. Yep. And it's not even really about Spider-Man all that much, it's about Kraven, you know. So I think I would recommend that. And then my sort of Ultimate Spider-Man, you know, check those out, the collections.
Yeah, you can get a good collection of those. Those are a good, especially the first, I'd say, you know, like 25, 30 issues of that. Those are really entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think those are great. And the book that I really like, and I don't know how popular it is, I think it's a book that surprises a lot of people, and it surprised me when I picked it up. I just picked it up because I like the artist. He has sort of like an anime sort of take on it, is Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane. I don't know if you guys have heard those books, mm-hmm. but they are a great take on Mary Jane, on her character. And they released them in sort of like manga sized editions, full color, and they came out with them in hardcover, and I have the hardcover ones, and that is a great book written by Sean McKeever. And I know I'm going to massacre the artist's name, Takashi Miyazawa. And those are some great books. And it looks like, well, the hardcovers might be hard to find right now, but the digests are on Amazon, and they look like they're pretty reasonable. They're used. They may not be in print anymore, but this was a series that I really got into and really liked, just because it kind of recaptured the innocence of Spider-Man instead of what they've kind of tried to do like for years and years, which is kind of like make him much darker and kind of sillier, you know. So I don't know, but I love that book. What about you guys? I mean, any particular other standouts that like that people might be able to find and trade? Or
no, I'm with you on the Ultimate Spider-Man. That's a great run. I really liked the Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane also. I've actually picked that up on your recommendation, and also because of McKeever, who's a really, really good writer.
Yeah.
I think those are probably my recommendations also.
Yeah, and for people who like the McFarlane stuff, you know, that Ian mentioned, it looks like they have that Spider-Man Torment run in hardcover and softcover, so you can get those too and see what Todd McFarlane did with them. I mean, he's not my favorite, but a lot of people did like his run, and his artwork is really, I mean, I don't know, you know, it sort of gets a bad rap, but I think his artwork is really impressive. Lee Field I can't stand, but McFarlane, I actually still think he's a pretty decent artist. I mean, maybe his anatomy and whatever isn't like the most perfect thing, but
It really fits Spider-Man.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's just, it's really dynamic, and it's like there's a lot of detail in there, and it's just like a really great cartoony style. I still like McFarlane's work despite what people.
Yeah, his stuff's great. I think he had a bad rap, I guess. I don't know why. I met a lady that was dating a comic book artist a while ago, like a long time ago. And they all got together and played softball games.
Yeah.
And she's like, she saw me reading a comic, and she's like, oh, you like comics? She's like, I was at a softball game last week, and Todd McFarlane tried to catch a fly ball and got hit in the face with it.
Oh.
And I'm like, is that why he hasn't been doing anything?
Oh, no.
And she's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, that's too bad. She's like, nah, he deserved it.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm still going to, you know, collect his books and buy his action figures. You know, I love his action figures when they came out. So, yeah, I guess people give him a bum rap for being maybe too hardcore or just not a nice guy, but who cares? I love his stuff.
Yeah, his stuff is, I could still look at it and not retch, which is, you know, more than I could say for Liefeld, you know, Rob Liefeld. I mean, why even get into that can of worms? But, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the Torment covers right now, and I'm actually really impressed. I mean, you can see why he kind of became the hot name that he was back then. I think his bad rap started coming around when Image started getting developed, and all their egos blew out of control, and then he kind of got bogged down with the realities of running a business, and he couldn't get his books out on time. Spawn wasn't necessarily all that well written, but I mean, it's still being published today, so he must be doing something right?
I guess so.
Yeah. So I don't know. So Spider-Man, I mean, definitely a lot of great stuff out there. The characters had a long history. If you can find them, and this would be like finding gold, I think, for some people at this point, but Marvel actually put out a lot of their more popular Marvel comics on CD, like giant CD collections, so that you could read them digitally. And they seem to be on Amazon. I see one. I actually had some of these. Where they would put, like, it was full runs of Spider-Man and Captain America and the Fantastic Four on a CD collection, but now they don't have them anymore because they realized, oops, people could probably distribute these really easily. But, you know, if you can, they're still listed on Amazon. I was looking at one, and, you know, a new box was like $230, but, you know, it looked like there was a used one for $140. So if you're a diehard Spider-Man, seek those out, because that is a good value, I think, you know, to get all those Spider-Man issues on CD. And those are legal. Marvel put them out themselves, so you're not breaking any laws by purchasing them. So, yeah, and I guess that's it for Spider-Man. I guess we ditched Captain America on the 4th of July, and we went with Spider-Man, which is fine. We'll do Cap next year. Screw him.
Spidey's an all-American hero, too.
Yes, he is. He is. So, well, anyone else have anything they want to say about Spider-Man?
I love Spider-Man.
I do. I love Spider-Man, too. I hope I like this movie. It better be decent. I hope it doesn't suck. But wait, I want to know some spoiler thing, Paul.
Okay.
And I don't care that I know
about
it going on.
I might have to shut my ears. What's the question?
The question is, I've been hearing rumors that they fucked with the whole Uncle Ben, like, he didn't stop the burglar thing in the new movie. Is that true? And anyone who doesn't want to hear it, shut your ears. But I want to know.
I think they did. I'm just going to say they did.
How so?
Well, that he didn't stop the burglar, like, that he didn't, it wasn't like...
Nope, not true.
They didn't fuck with that? All right.
Not true. He had the opportunity to stop it and chose not to.
Okay, good.
And as a matter of fact, I think they did it in a really believable, almost offhanded way. Like, it's not like a great big moment for him where he has this choice, you know? Like, it's almost like, oh, well, you know, it's almost... It's like easier not to go after this guy. I'm just not going to waste my time. And, you know, and the way he's particularly motivated, they do not mess with it. It is, it's still there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good. Because that was sort of something that I was ticked off about. I was like, come on now, come on.
Here is what I guarantee you people will be pissed off about. The line, "With great power comes great responsibility," is nowhere to be found in the movie.
Oh, that kind of bites.
But the theme comes across loud and clear, okay, which is even better in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if you get the point across, but goddamn, that's a good line. I mean, that's probably Stan Lee's greatest thing that he ever wrote.
And it probably has the best Stan Lee cameo in a Marvel movie that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I've heard that... It's too bad that they can't get Ditko to do a cameo. I mean, that sucks. But all right, cool. So, well, that's all the Spider-Man we have, I guess. This has been Part-Time Fanboy. We finally got another podcast up. Next weekend is Comic-Con!
Yep!
So we're going to work on maybe doing another one before or right after, if we can, if we have the energy. But for right now, this is all the part-time fanboy you can have. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Part-time fanboy.